You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/kidsandfamily. Just go to Indeed.com/kidsandfamily right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Receiving this message. We are Ken Jennings and John Roderick. We speak to you from our present, which we can only assume is your distant past, the turbulent time that was the early 21st century.
Fearing the great cataclysm that will surely befall our civilization, we began this monumental reference of strange and obscure human knowledge. These recordings represent our attempt to compile and preserve wonders and esoterica that would otherwise be lost.
So whether you're listening from an advanced civilization or have just reinvented the technology to decrypt our transmissions, this is our legacy to you.
This is our time capsule. This is the Omnibus.
You have accessed entry 1351.SS0212, certificate number 32793, Turtle Soup.
Beautiful soup, so rich and green.
I turned 50 not long ago, late spring.
Congratulations.
Yeah, people say that.
Your birthday party was amazing.
That I didn't invite you to?
Yeah, that's right.
Well, I never... Are you precious about birthdays? Are
the
you like...
The opposite.
Me too.
I wouldn't tell anybody that I was having a birthday if it weren't for Facebook.
Yes, telling everyone.
Commodified birthdays, and now I get all these birthday greetings.
I feel like you didn't want people to know when in the year it was, but then Wikipedia sold you out somehow. Somebody went to the DMV.
Yeah, it's a drag, and I think, you know, when I was drinking, I would always go to some... like suburban tavern where nobody knew me and just sit at the bar and like spend my birthday alone. And it was at a crap bar, and it was just so great for me. And then people started, you know, all it takes is one. Oh, happy birthday. Oh, it's your birthday. And then it's just this gradual
patient zero. Shut up.
Rumbling of like, ugh. But I live, in close proximity to my daughter's mother/partner, who believes that her birthday is a month long.
Right.
And should be celebrated every day. She should get a gift every day for a month.
I don't want to perpetuate gender stereotypes, but I think there are not a lot of straight cis guys who are like, it's my birthday month, guys. Let the party begin.
You're buying again. No, but it's just something. And you know, it's like, well, there's a run-up to it too. Like, you know, next month is my birthday month.
It has nothing to do with aging in my case. Like, it's not like, oh, we can't, I don't want to celebrate. I don't want to think about how I'm 52. It's really more like, it's faintly embarrassing. I didn't do anything.
Oh, like, to be congratulated.
To be feted. Yeah. Like, I didn't do anything. Well, I didn't die in my 40s. Like,
yeah.
People would find out it was my 50th on Jeopardy. We were working that day, so there was a big shindig. And, you know, the audience was applauding, and I'm like, why are you clapping? Because I didn't die in my 40s? What kind of achievement is that?
There's something I think about the age 50, which we want to think that it's the halfway mark to something.
I was just thinking about this.
But you know it's not. It's well over the halfway mark.
On some part
mark.
Of your brain, you're like, yeah, I'm going to live to be 100, and therefore...
Yeah.
And no, I think the average U.S. life expectancy means it's the two-thirds mark.
Yeah, right. It's 85, right? Or 80...
Not younger.
Two,
is it? I mean, once we're our age, yes.
Yeah, right.
You know, because you've taken all the people that died before our age out of the equation. Thankfully.
Yep.
Get those infant mortality losers out of here. But
in my line of work, I think the 40th birthday is sometimes sort of celebrated as like, you made it. All the, you know.
Unlike the following.
But the problem is then there are all these people. I've lost a handful of friends to OD and alcoholic death in the last, not to bring this show down, but in the last 5 or 6 years. And you're like, dude, you're 55. Are you seriously going to OD in your car out by the airport? Like, that seems, you kicked it, you know, but then they fall back on it.
Well, even if you're not you, this is the age where your friends start to also die of stomach cancer.
And cancer, that's right.
And you're aware on some level, even though it feels like 50, the halfway mark, you know that A, mathematically it's not, but also B, like, the good part is all over. Like, you know, we're just marking time until there's no more good years when you can actually do and enjoy stuff because.
But you look amazing. You look so healthy.
That's what I was trying to get to. Thank you.
No, you look.
That's the point of this whole.
For 50, you look amazing.
there was a thing online. Jeopardy posted like, Ked turned 50 today. Here's the weird surprise party we gave him.
Good for them.
And finally. And there's so many people in the comments who are like, Ken's 50. He looks great. But what you realize is those are 20-year-old Redditors. Everybody who's our age or older is like, no, he just looks like a normal 50-year-old. Have you guys ever seen a 50-year-old? Like, yeah.
Well, some of us gray out, right? And so I went gray. My beard went gray. So there's not even any concealing it. You can't cut my hair short and pretend that I didn't also go gray everywhere.
But the gray beard is good.
Yes, except a gray beard is one of those at a distance. You know, if you're walking down the street and here I come the other way, the gray beard makes, until you get close, I could be anywhere between 40 and 80.
You're like the guy riding over the hill in Lawrence of Arabia. It's like you're a wavy blur of age.
And then I shoot his little camel friend. And
until you get very close, no one's, it's not clear what shape you are.
Exactly. But yeah, I think the gray beard is, you know, people talk about, women in Hollywood talk about becoming invisible at a certain point.
Yeah.
And I think women after 50 feel that there's this problem where they're invisible. But the gray beard is kind of an invisibility cloak for people younger than 30.
Don't have to pay attention to this guy.
Yeah, I see people for the first, because I've always, you know, I'm a attention-driven person.
What?
Yes. And so— there was a point in my mid-40s where I still was, you know, I would get attention from people walking by. And then when the beard went gray, I noticed an attention deficit.
Well.
And I said, I have a disorder about this. I don't like it.
Well, you're at the time in your life where you will start spending more times in places like doctor's waiting rooms where maybe it'll go the other way. Maybe you'll get more attention paid to you because of your...
Why are you so young?
You're graying.
I went and had there was a spot on my side, on the side of my cheek. A spot, a new kind of spot.
You don't want that.
No, a different kind, a new, and I was like, what is this spot? This is a bad spot.
I've still never been to a dermatologist years old, but.
And so. I went to the dermatologist right away. I was like, this is a bad spot. I ran into Dr. John, who's the indie rock doctor here in Seattle, who goes to all the indie rock shows, but he's also like
he left
an
New
ER
Orleans
doc.
And now he's a dermatologist.
It's a different Dr. John.
Okay.
And Dr. John looked at it under a streetlight in the rain in the middle of the night.
See, yeah, this is why I'm not going to go to a rock doctor. This sounds terrible.
No, and I was like,
I'm not getting back alley melanoma removed.
I walked him to his car and I was like, hey, Dr. John, what's this? And he was like, now I'm not a dermatologist, but that's either a sporphus or it's a. Splebogophus, and one of the Spergus porphus is fine, but the Splebogophus is...
You love to hear it might be benign.
Yeah.
Two options.
So I went to the dermatologist, and they, you know, did something to it and biopsied it, and then didn't call me. I went a whole week. They were like, we'll tell you next week.
Isn't that good?
Yeah, and I was like...
No call equals.
And then on the following Monday, they sent me, like, a notice, like, your bill is unpaid. And I called him up.
Your diagnosis is unpaid, buddy.
And I was like, hey, you were supposed to tell me what. And they're like, oh, yeah, well, we'll call them. They're out of the office this week. Finally, I got a thing that was like, it's Aspergillophilus. It's not anything to worry about. Still well, there, though.
I mean, this is just by way of saying that 50 does seem like a milestone. And so even though I've been very birthday averse, it did seem like I was going to have to do something.
What are some other things that at 50 years old you feel like they have matured into? Like a cheese is, no, a 50-year-old cheese is old cheese.
Is there alcohol you want to be 50?
It
seems a little touch and go for wine.
The last time we talked about alcohol on this show.
You got angry notes from angry Scotch notes. Single malt Scotch people.
You don't know anything about Scotland.
Let's say something terribly wrong about single malt Scotch right now, just so I'm off the hook for anything I get wrong in the rest of the show. Let's see.
It's made with the same bacteria that makes cheese.
That's correct. Yeah. People don't know that. Yogurt and Scotch. It's chemically, molecularly identical.
I feel like a 50-year-old guitar is... It's not like they write it down like it's 50 now, but, you know,
well,
that's the era where guitars would be expensive.
Well, what's weird is that there are now TV shows that are 50 years old. You know, SNL's got to be, it's over 50 now, right?
No,
76, right?
Yeah.
So it's about to turn 50. Oh. 60 Minutes is probably close. Sesame Street's over 50. So it no longer is the... You know, nothing was 50 ever, you know, like people didn't turn 50.
Right.
But we had some friends that love New Orleans, and weirdly, I'd never been to New Orleans. And we were like, this is the excuse. We'll spend a weekend in New Orleans, where I assume you've spent time, right?
Yeah. Although less than you would think.
Less than you would want, because what a great city.
But I've been there like, a handful of times, played a couple of shows there.
Like, I'd been to Louisiana, but, like, always just speaking at some college somewhere off in some weird Arkansas-y part of Louisiana
now
or
that's
something.
That's weirder, to have been to Louisiana but never New Orleans.
It is, but this was my traveling itinerary where I would just, you know, go speak at some college, go speak. So it wasn't like, it was always the fifth city in the state or something.
Although, now that I think about it, the first time I visited Louisiana, we didn't go to New Orleans. We drove across some Arkansas part of it up in the north and ate at a Sherry's.
Were you headed somewhere else?
No. What was it? Not a Sherry's. We were going from one place to another. You know, that's the problem.
Well, I'm not against Dixieland Jazz or Bayous or anything else, but we were mostly there for the food.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, like, New Orleans is just an amazing one-of-a-kind city, of course. And, you know,
but it's just shrimp. Everything in New Orleans, everyone's like, New Orleans for the food. And it's like shrimp prepared 60 ways.
Not necessarily. I mean, there's great Gulf seafood that's not shrimp. We were there during crawfish season, so we had a lot of etouffee.
Which is like a shrimp.
Yeah.
It's just a bigger shrimp.
And we were eating redfish, which is a very big meaty shrimp.
Yeah, it's like a fish-shaped shrimp.
We all covered this in the,
Oh, yeah.
Mobile Bay...
Boiling pot.
Yeah, that's what it was called. Mm-hmm. The heat dome of shrimp or the jambalaya tide or whatever that entry was called. It's funny. Like, our friend's niece who still lives there was kind of showing us around, and she was like, the thing about New Orleans is it's the, you know, despite, you know, not to paper over any obvious like class and racial divisions that
you wouldn't want to do that in New Orleans.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's the only, you know, it's the city that is most recently like physically like drowned people based on race and elevation, you know, like altitude is literally class there. But she was like, you know, this is the American city where everybody in or out just kind of agrees that it would be not, it's everything it is because of its Black community. And that's sadly shrinking after Katrina, but it's true. But it's also like in the 19th century, it was a little less true because it was the place that was kind of a racial outlier, you know, because of a huge Creole population that went everything from Creoles of color to, you know, the Creole, the Spanish Creoles in name, you know, it was just a huge
Acadians,
a huge racial spectrum, and just a literal melting pot where the foods were, it's French and Spanish and African and Caribbean and, you know, Southern Mountains and it's
everybody's got a different way of preparing shrimp.
This is the point of the movie Forrest Gump, is that it's funny to list 40 kinds of shrimp preparations, and I disagree. That's why I don't like the movie Forrest Gump. It's fundamentally not
funny. That's why you don't like the movie Forrest Gump?
It's my main problem. Christopher Guest listing types of nuts in Best in Show or whatever that is. Now that's comedy.
That is great. But walnut.
Red cashew nut. But McKelvey
still makes me laugh.
Williamson or whatever his name is doing shrimp preparations. Eh, leaves me cold. But so at the time, like, you know, Jim Crow hit Louisiana hard, but in the 20th century, because there had always been this kind of laissez-faire, you know what?
Yeah.
We'll figure it out kind of approach.
Sure. Everybody just melted.
Very hard to draw the kind of lines that white supremacists like to draw of here's who can go in this building and who can't, because it's just from everywhere.
Right.
And for some, you know, I know you're a big melting pot believer, and the food I think is a testament to that, because it is just from everywhere, and it's better than anybody else's food because they have just the greatest innovations of French cuisine and African cuisine and Caribbean and all the rest. And we just ate ourselves sick.
Mm, and that sounds great. In a place that serves mostly shrimp and seafood.
Are you against shrimp?
We ate ourselves sick.
Is your take on the show that New Orleans has bad food?
Oh, no.
You're going to be very unpopular.
Oh, I don't mean to suggest that it's not wonderful. It's just, there's no antelope, right? Which is one of my favorite foods.
It is not where the deer and the antelope play.
But
there's gator.
It's not the main, if you like, for instance, cow.
Right.
It's not where you're going to find a ton of cow.
The best dishes on the menu, if you ask the server who might have worked at this place for 30 years, we had a server give us his business card. Anytime you come back to Galatoire's, you know, because our friend knew the places to get, the old great American restaurants there to get, you know, the oldest family-owned restaurants in America are all in the quarter, you know.
It's from 1790 or something. Yeah,
it's amazing. And if you ask him, it will be seafood. Yeah, here's the specialty of the house.
Yeah.
But there's also amazing baked stuff and...
You know, it's only like one state north, but certainly two states north, and it's all cow.
Right.
And so it's very much like mouth of the river food.
But there is still barbecue influence. I think that's what's great about
it. Oh, I see.
Because, you know, you do have southern food, omnipresent, you know. Yeah. You've still got the idea that, well, of course we're going to have
grits and ribs greens
and brisket and grits and all the rest. And... You mentioned antelope, but one thing we were surprised to see, or I was surprised to see on just about every menu, if you go to high-end places, it's the only place in America where you expect to see turtle soup in the appetizers at these venerable old restaurants.
There was that place in Portland called Montage.
I never went.
That was underneath the bridges over the river. And it was this weird place. They played really loud heavy metal music, but you could get gator and turtle and six kinds of shrimp.
Rattlesnake sausage?
Yeah,
that kind of place?
Like it had all this New Orleans food, and they seated you at big tables with newspaper on them. And it was like a place. You'd go in there at 4 o'clock in the morning. Oh, it was 24 hours. 4 o'clock in the morning, and they're playing Slayer, like so your ears would bleed. But it's full of kids going to their prom? Like, it just...
That's Portland, baby.
Of anything that encapsulated old Portland, it was Montage to me.
But it was specifically kind of Louisiana Gulf Coast kind of food?
Yeah. And it was the only place I'd ever seen turtle on the menu outside of New Orleans, or gator, or any of those things.
Do you have the vague idea of turtle soup as a cultural signifier of class?
Yes, but I've never had it.
No, it's gone, right? I was very surprised. I guess Louisiana, New Orleans is kind of the place where it survives on menus.
Like the type of thing you'd see on Park Avenue in 1870,
exactly.
Where it's like, and then the next course is turtle soup.
And it was ubiquitous on a fancy menu. One of the courses would be turtle soup.
It sounds gross.
I tried it.
Oh.
Because I assume it's one of these weird meats. It's going to taste like chicken. Yeah, exactly. And I didn't order turtle soup, but my friend did. And apparently it was prized for its very specific taste, which is maybe not like chicken. The thing they often would say about turtles is depending on which part of the turtle you get the meat from, it's all seven meats. Imagine a time with seven meats, and turtles have, depending on where you get it from, it can taste like beef, pork, chicken, goat, veal. I'm missing two meats. What even is there anymore? Duck?
Rattlesnake and...
Maybe something seafoody?
So wait,
fish and crab? I don't know.
A turtle is a turducken, but of itself?
A turtle is a marvel like that God has given us to have all the meats.
No, I'm embarrassed to ask this. What is a turtle? what kind of thing is a turtle. It legs eggs.
It's a reptile.
It's a duck.
It's a colonia. It's a duck. A lot of, because it has that beak, that snapping beak.
It's got the duck beak, right.
That's how you know it's a duck.
But it's a reptile, yeah. Like a snake.
Colonians. They have big, there were dinosaurs that had the big kind of armory shells.
Of course there were.
And that's what this guy is. And right.
Dinosaurs were reptiles.
Yeah, but then.
But had feathers. They were an apteryx. They were a flightless bird with hairy feathers.
Dinosaurs were closer to modern birds than to modern reptiles.
But birds and reptiles aren't the same.
But back then, evolutionarily, they're egg-laying. They're from the same little arm that we are not.
They lay eggs, unlike humans.
Right.
Okay.
We freeze our eggs.
Got it. Kangaroos also don't lay eggs.
Correct. There's lots of things that don't lay. Trolley cars don't lay eggs.
Okay.
For the rest of the show, let's list some things that don't lay. Trombones don't lay eggs. I tasted my friend's turtle soup, and it's kind of a rich. Basically, I don't want to put down turtle soup, but it kind of seemed like in New Orleans you're getting gumbo. It's because it's got one of these thick. It's got a kind of a medium dark roux. And that's the basis for a very rich, flavorful thing. They often add sherry table side, but it's kind of a creamy, rich soup with some ground up meat in it. Not all of which is turtle, by the way. I think
some shrimp too. I bet.
I think everybody's very open about how it's a kind of a veal based broth.
Oh,
But it's got turtle in it in the name and
cow too.
And it kind of tasted like some people say it's a mix between. The thigh meat of like a chicken thigh or pork and shrimp, like it's both land and seafood because you know turtles are
land and sea.
Turtles are amphibious. Some are aquatic. Some are on land.
Is it salty?
Not really.
Is it chewy?
It's. Here I think it's hard to tell texture because you know people don't eat turtle steaks unless you're Robinson Crusoe or something. Yeah. Like I think there's a reason why it's usually ground up in a soup, or maybe a mix between duck and crab, like. On a seafood spectrum where there's kind of like sweet, light crab on one end and then like trout or mackerel on the other end, it's kind of in the middle.
What kind of joke is God playing on us to make a thing that is half duck, half crab?
Well, how about all seven kinds of meat, but then to put it in an impenetrable shell?
Right. Oh, that's the thing. It's a puzzle.
The harder you work, the better the meat. So like God's hiding his very most delectable delicatessen animal.
Is like
in
a
the hardest
turtle liver,
the hardest armor.
So, what kind of turtle do they raise? Turtles specifically for soup?
They do have to farm them now.
Soup turtles.
They're snapping turtles, and that's as we'll see. It's because, but there were once a great range of turtles. Like this was not fancy food originally. You know, this was Caribbean island people pre-contact eating, green sea turtles, or like Native Americans on the kind of the mid-Atlantic coast eating terrapins.
Yeah.
I guess a terrapin is a specific kind of like turtle that can be both land and sea, or either land or sea. It's
they play the banjo and at railroad stations.
Well, that's
typically
is that your impression?
Yeah, basically.
I thought like terrapin sounds like such a Greek or Latinate word to me. Like, yeah, it's going to be from earth foot or
earth first.
It is not. It's the Algonquin word for edible turtle. I mean, I'm sure it's not terrapin. I'm sure it's tulubricumpun or something, right. And then. Some bonehead Jamestown guy is like, yeah, terrapin, got it.
Terrapin, landfoot.
Yeah, don't let the door hit you. Terrapin, we'll eat these too. So these people, you know, these native people were eating them, and it was a staple, and you can see why. Like, there were big, chunky turtles back then.
Yeah, chunkers.
Three pounds of meat in a single turtle, and, you know, you can see why you would want to hunt turtles.
Sure, they're slow.
They can't get away.
They're, you know, maybe they're wise.
Well, they're old.
They're old.
They're like you. They're invisible. They're ineffable. They've turned 50, and now you just want to eat them.
You know, every year in Maui, I go snorkeling.
You're swimming with the honu.
To commune with the honu, they're very important to me. And as as I've probably explained on the show, I've learned that if you look for them, you will not find them. You must not look for them. And then they find you.
I think back then you would just stumble upon turtles.
They're all over there.
You know, think about how people would, you know, when white people moved in, you know, they're going to build their homes near sources of water. So no matter where you live on the frontier, wherever it is, probably Maryland back then,
right.
Delmarva Peninsula frontier, you know, your house is going to be near a well or a pond or something. And guess what? There's delicious, big, slow meat jeeps crawling around your backyard. And those cooters are good eating.
If you think about how much work goes into eating a single oyster, which is just as hard to get into, an oyster is just like a less clever turtle.
I'm told turtles are hard to dress. Like an oyster, basically, if you have the right shaped knife, you can outsmart the oyster.
Yeah.
Whereas I think turtles, there's a lot of skill and effort involved in getting in there.
Craftsman days are here at Lowe's with big savings on the tools you need. Right now, get a free select tool when you buy the Craftsman V20 2-Pack Battery Kit. Whether it's the backyard, the bathroom, or beyond, Craftsman has the tools to help you power through and get the project done right. Because DIYing is unpredictable, but your tools shouldn't be. Shop Craftsman at Lowe's today. Valid through 6/18 while supplies last. Selection varies by location.
Yeah. Does turtle soup, it's not served in the shell.
It was originally, actually. That was the big ceremonial thing. But that was when Europe discovered it. And here's how that happened. You know, first of all, plantations move in and you've got this enslaved population looking to supplement whatever rations they get, which I'm sure is the least, the least the employer, the master can, what's the enslaver, that's what we say.
Enslaver.
The least the enslaver.
I mean, the employer, the head office.
Oh, I got to fill out another W-9 this year,
But there are turtles, of course, by the slave quarters, too. It's going to be the lowest
place. So an easy way to supplement your, you know, the caloric intake if you're a struggling slave population. That was true when free blacks started to live in other parts of the Atlantic coast. There are accounts of Confederate soldiers, hungry Confederate soldiers chowing down on cooters.
Seems right. Just threw the word cooter in here a couple of times.
Wouldn't you join the army? If you were going to join the army, you were in a tent with a lot of guys, wouldn't you chow down on cooters?
Well, I got to have a definition of what a cooter is.
I guess that's just the...
That's what they call
it? Swampland name. If you...
Wow, that changes my interpretation of Dukes of Hazzard by a lot.
Oh, yeah, he's called Cooter.
Yeah, the guy, the mechanic guy is Cooter.
Is he slow?
Well,
is he a duck?
He's always under a car. Maybe if you think about...
Yeah, a turtle on its back.
Yeah.
You walk into Hazzard County. A turtle is lying on its back.
When someone in the South is working on a car, do you think they turn it upside down so its wheels are in the air?
No, the person is upside down. The person's on his back. He's on one of those little roller things, which is analogous to a shell.
There you go.
I don't know.
A car over the top of it.
I don't know. Yeah, exactly. There's the carapace and the plastron. Those are the two parts of a turtle shell. But I can't remember which one's which.
But now, in Europe, they already had turtles.
They did, but I guess not for good eating. In Europe, I was looking at this. There's like a dozen or less species of turtles, but they're little pond turtles.
Yeah.
And I think nobody's going to be like, let's break open this guy and see what he tastes like.
Probably because the prehistoric Europeans ate all the turtles, the big turtles.
Yeah, there were giant oxen and turtles and armadillos just wandering slowly across the Alps.
Yeah.
And then they were gone as soon as humans evolved something pointy. That's what we learned happened to all the other megafaunas.
That's right.
That's true. No turtle. There were ginormous turtles. But Europe didn't discover turtles Britain in particular, until sailors brought them back. I mean, I guess leatherback sea turtles do get up to Iberia and stuff.
Yeah.
So maybe it's possible that, you know, seafaring villages down there would be like, oh, it's turtle season.
I suppose. I've never seen a turtle in Europe. I mean, a big turtle. And yeah. I look everywhere.
Well, if you don't look,
I'm in Montana,
maybe that's the problem. You're looking.
Oh!
If you don't look. But British sailors would discover these slow-moving swimming guys full of meat. And, of course, that was great news. Fresh meat after all the maggot-filled
scurvy and so forth.
Biscuit and hardtack and salt pork they'd been eating. So they would just decimate turtle populations everywhere they arrived. Like
what an uncharacteristic thing for...
You would not expect the British Navy to do such a thing. So they would, for a while... In fact, it took a long time for turtles to get back to Europe because they were almost always eaten on the way home.
Oh, wow.
You know, these expeditions would have 13 tortoises wandering around the deck because they had found some island full of tortoises.
Yeah.
And then, but by the time they get back to Southampton or Bristol or whatever... The turtles were all inside the semen.
Did this happen in the Galapagos when they first arrived?
It happened even to Darwin. Darwin's like, hey, let's take some tortoise samples. And by the time Darwin gets home, he's just eaten them all. Darwin was the hungry lunch boy. And he's just, eventually he's just looking. Imagine you're on a ship, you know, you're down there. It's like knowing you have a couple pieces of cake left in the fridge or whatever.
Yeah.
Like you're lying in your swaying hammock, the ship is creaking, and you know there's like six sea tortoises just kind of wandering the forecastle.
Delicious.
At some point in the night, you're like, there's still pie in the fridge.
Yeah. But it's like an 8-hour process to get the meat out of the turtle.
Well, you get some of your buddies.
You're going to wake up in the morning.
You get some of your buddies.
I mean, eating snapping turtles, I can see, because they're miserable creatures. They're mean.
Right.
You can eat them out of vengeance. But a sea turtle.
I know they're nice, big, yeah. Dumb. But back then, nobody was like, hey, should we anthropomorphize this or eat it?
Oh, I see what you're saying.
They were just like, hey. Metabolic content.
Yeah, they weren't. That's interesting. There was a moment, a thought technology that swept the West that was like, no, everything has a personality. Like my screwdriver is a little friend.
But back then it never occurred to you. You're too hungry to think this. Is right. This rabbit cute? Before I put it in my paella, let me think about its eyes. Anyway, so thousands of tortoises would get taken like on a single voyage, but none of them ever made it home. Finally, a few get home to Europe, and it starts to catch on that sailors are saying that this is their favorite new food. And of course, with all the effort it takes to get there. In America, you know, it's a little more democratic. Like during the Depression, turtles were called Hoover chicken.
Oh, yeah, Hoover chicken.
Because he was not giving us that chicken in every pot. We had to go out back to the pond and catch us a cooter.
Catch us a cooter.
But in
Britain, a Hoover cooter.
In Britain, the economies of bringing them back from the South Atlantic or the South Pacific or whatever means this is food for the rich. So big, you know, bashes start to have this fancy new meat. The earliest cookbook, I think it's like mid-18th century, announces, here's how to prepare turtle the West India way. And it's basically modern turtle soup. It's turtle in a veal broth with some spices, maybe some fortified wine. I think it's Madeira instead of sherry. Today, I think it's a cream-based sauce in a lot of turtle soups, or at least in the 20th century.
Back then, a gravy, though, cream gravy.
Yeah, back then it was egg whites. I think that's how you would thicken the soup. But it's not that different than the turtle soup that a hotel luncheon would be serving in 1930. It was food for aristocrats. At one point, the mayor of London gave a big banquet where everybody got turtle soup. I guess soup is also a way to stretch the scarce ingredient.
Yeah.
Right?
Which is shrimp.
Like, they didn't have hamburger helper back then. It's not shrimp. It's turtle. Try to keep up.
Yeah, so it's interesting to me, though, that they would have already been appropriating West Indian food as an interesting...
Oh, yeah.
You know, like, that seems like it would be early, too. Like, oh, no, this is Indian food, or like, this is, you know, like,
it's Caribbean the same as in 1970. Food. What if we went for sushi?
Yeah, right.
Right, yeah. I mean, maybe the implication is this is what our soldiers and sailors... in the West Indies, maybe this is how they eat the turtle.
Oh, I see.
So maybe it's not so much like the pad thai of 1750. But maybe it is.
In the 50s, people in middle America were still discovering pizza for the first time, and they maintained their anti-Italian racism, but they were like, we'll try their quaint little bread food.
What's more Italian to them, pizza or spaghetti?
I think they both were introduced after the war as a food that you could eat as a normal person.
What do you think becomes American first?
Oh, spaghetti.
Right?
Yeah, I think so.
Because for a while, it's a guy with a mandolin and an accordion singing to you while you eat it.
Yeah, even in Lady and the Tramp, it's like a... Right, hey, that's the 50s.
But it's maybe a decade later that it's like, nope, I don't feel like cooking. We're having spaghetti.
Well, it must have been macaroni and cheese that first kind of got Americanized.
That's the pasta that we...
Yeah, North Americanized. And then it was like, well, it's all the same, you know.
So the funny thing here is that turtle kind of moves back to... Once it's fancy in Britain and new British settlers keep arriving on these shores, you know,
they're like, whoa, we're
now turtle's a fancy food. Yeah. So the early history of the Republic is full of turtle soup. On July 4th, 1776, just a day or two after signing the Declaration of Independence, John Adams celebrated with a bowl of turtle soup. George Washington, after winning the Revolutionary War, George Washington celebrated with his officers in a Manhattan tavern where they had a big turtle dinner. Terrapin stew was served at Lincoln's second inaugural. Oh, this is good. Before Aaron Burr and Alexander Hamilton headed to New Jersey, to kill each other. They used to head to New Jersey regularly because they were both members of the Hoboken Turtle Club, you know, a gentleman's society of turtle soup slurpers.
Huh.
Because it was party food. It was not just haute cuisine. It was like there were these big bashes, kind of the equivalent of and you know, back then they also had clam bakes and hog roasts and barbecues and whatnot. But I think more popular than any of them was a turtle frolic.
A turtle frolic.
You and all your friends. And turtle would be served like three ways. You know, that every course would be turtle a different way. And one of them, as you say, would be a big turtle shell overturned and now full of piping hot, creamy turtle soup.
See, now that's, I guess, what I always assumed when I thought about it, that turtle soup was a clear broth with clear turtle in it, like little turtle
like
legs.
Like chunks? Like,
well, just, I don't know. Like, yeah, like a... Like it seems,
is it like the clams in clam chowder? Is that what you're picturing?
No. I was thinking of it more like, I mean, how do you eat a turtle? You turn it over, you cook it in its own juices, I guess. And it didn't occur to me that it was like a stew, because I love a stew.
Wow.
And it didn't occur to me that a stew was party food, except, of course, if you're going to have a party, make a big pot of something.
If you're going to serve a bunch of people. And of course, these are servants are carrying out the turtle shell to much. It's kind of a luau, like, right. Celebratory, like, oh, look what's coming now.
The last time you and Mindy came over to my house for dinner, which was the only time you've come over to my house for dinner, I served you stew.
Wait, how is this our failing? Are we just supposed to show up? Hey, John, what's for dinner?
Okay, I should rephrase it. The last time I invited you
us
to come
for
over,
dinner. There we
but
go.
But yeah, I served a stew, and you made a comment, you're serving this in mixing bowls, because, of course...
were you? I can't remember.
Yeah, I served it in mixing bowls, because it's, you know...
I like it.
I have a collection of old mixing bowls.
It's like a boxcar children. It's cottagecore. Everybody gets a different spoon. No, it was good.
Wooden spoons.
And it was good.
Yeah.
And it was good stew.
Oh, thank
it was
you.
Like kind of a, what, like a mulligan stew?
Yeah,
kind
I
of
work on
Irish
stews. Yeah.
It was Irishy. And this continued well into the 20th century, this idea of turtles as a staple, turtle soup as any nice menu. So every cookbook would have turtle recipes. Every banquet would have a turtle soup course. Well into the mid-20th century, Campbell's was making frozen turtle soup.
No, they were not.
Yeah, I mean, they didn't make canned. I don't know if you remember this, but they did make canned mock turtle soup in our lifetimes.
I do remember that, which is why when the mock turtle shirt came out, it resonated. The name resonated.
Is it like a turtleneck like shirt?
A turtleneck, but it doesn't fold over. It's just like
it just goes up a
bit. It's just a half. And that was the mock turtle was very popular in the late 80s.
And that's a witty joke because people would remember.
That's right. It was witty. And then there was a band in Seattle called Mock Turtle, except they spelled it M-A-C-H.
Ah.
Like, oh, now we've taken it a third way.
Well, this is the Seattle aviation connection. We got the Sonics.
That's right.
We got Mach Turtle.
It's the sonic boom of turtles.
the reason was that in Europe, there was just, you know, everyone was aware that turtle soup was an important dietary thing that all the fancy people ate, but turtle was too expensive to buy. So mock turtle soup was a way to kind of simulate the taste and texture of turtle soup without having to buy turtle.
What did they use to simulate turtles?
It's a little grim. They used a whole calf's head. The idea being that all the sweetbreads and the fats and the delicious things that cook off a calf's head kind of give you that every meat quality of the rich quality of a turtle broth.
Mm. Eyeballs and ears and
pretty much.
Yeah.
I'm not against, to me that's not Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom, because I love cabeza tacos, which are like beef cheeks.
Sure.
So I'm not against this.
My people use every part of the calf.
Thank you. That's important. I mean, also, I guess you could let them grow up and have long, happy lives. That's one argument.
How happy is a cow's life? Not that happy.
I assume the reason why mock turtle became, like, entered the public vocabulary in band names and shirt names is because of Lewis Carroll.
Oh.
Late in Alice in Wonderland, she meets, and this part's not in the Disney cartoon, so I think people are not, like, they're less iconic than, say, the Mad Hatter or the Cheshire Cat, but she meets a griffin and a mock turtle. And in Tenniel's illustration, the mock turtle has a turtle shell, but a calf's head. And the joke would be that, you know, a mock turtle soup, what if mock turtle soup was not mock space turtle soup, but it was soup made out of a mock turtle? like a veal tortoise hybrid.
Bizarre. I mean, it's almost like Russian literature. If you don't speak 19th century English, you wouldn't get the jokes.
I have an annotated Alice in Wonderland that kind of explains all the Victorian cultural references or the higher math that we miss when we read. I guess it's full of puns, but yeah. Like, and it won't surprise you to know that this was my favorite book when I checked it out of the elementary school library in fourth or fifth grade. I love that
science-ified Alice in Wonderland.
I'm going to understand Alice in Wonderland. So mock turtle soup was actually more common in the 20th century. It was more commonly prepared in the 20th century than real turtle soup. Campbell's made cans of it. Andy Warhol was often asked about Campbell's soup, and he would say his favorite was the mock turtle, but they don't make it anymore. That was kind of his stock answer to what's your favorite soup can.
It does sort of roll off the brain a little better than calf's head soup.
You can see it's smart branding. If you're looking for, maybe is that your conspiracy? They needed something to do with calf's heads and they wanted to gussy it up a little bit?
Yeah, I mean, you would assume that they would use calf's heads just to make dog food, but then
that's wasting a delicious calf's head.
Yeah, that's right. It's too delicious for that.
Apparently it is because it's got this very rich meat. There is still one company that makes mock turtle soup in cans, I was happy to say, Worthmore's in Cincinnati, because apparently mock turtle soup is still a bit of a regional, I don't know what it is about the Cincinnati area that leads to it being this culinary outlier with their weird chili.
Well, that's the thing.
Whatnot.
They make chili out of weird things too. They're like, we got all these weird things.
We're going to put spaghetti at the bottom of our chili,
yeah,
as you do. And they still eat mock turtle soup, and a local company still cans it.
Well, no, but you remember one of the things about Cincinnati-style chili is the real stuff is made out of beef heart.
Oh, yeah.
I think maybe it's just Cincinnati was poor.
We talked about on Jeopardy recently, there was a clue about how Cincinnati dogs have chili on them. And I saw a bunch of
the dogs roaming the streets?
No, like a hot dog, like a Chicago dog, or in this case, a Coney dog, or whatever they call it.
Yeah.
We said it has chili on it, and a lot of angry Cincinnatians were like, that's not chili. It's a chili-like chopped up beef heart sauce with ground beef in it. And a bunch of other people were like, but it's called chili on every Cincinnati dog restaurant. So I still don't know if I'm allowed to call it chili or not.
Well, people in Cincinnati are really
touchy. If Cincinnati is still inhabited in your era, please explain to us why you guys are eating beef heart and cow head and calling it turtle.
You know, my mom is from Northern Ohio, as I've said 1,000 times, and I think she thinks of Cincinnati as being part of the South.
Right.
But
food should get better, not worse, as you head south.
Oh, I see.
Like, but why are they not eating delicious brisket?
You don't think of Kentucky as being like a food center.
If you like squirrel, I guess.
Oh, we're going to get letters now. We're Kentucky Colonels.
Oh, sorry.
We can't be
I don't want to lose my. I don't want to get busted down to major.
Yeah, Kentucky major.
So, but turtle soup was already fading at the time mock turtle soup was rising. And I think we should explain that we now live in an era where turtle soup is no longer found on any menus except for these high-end New Orleans spots.
All the sentient turtles that comprise the futurelings of the future are breathing a sigh of relief.
Ooh,
that we stopped talking about this genocidal food.
You guys made it through the genetic bottleneck that was turtle soup. And the question of why turtle soup declined is, it's multifaceted. I mean, I think I was reading a Savour article that implies that, hey, if the reason why everybody was eating turtles is because you had a well or a pond out back, then indoor plumbing means fewer turtles around.
Turtles.
They're out in the wetlands far from buildable land.
But can you farm turtles?
Apparently it's hard. The U.S. government in the early 20th century, realizing that demand might outstrip supply, this is, you know, well before the conservation era, they were like, well, this is profitable. Let's farm some turtles. Turns out they're very hard to farm. I think mostly because a cow will get to butchering age, you know, by the fall or whatever.
Right.
Whereas a turtle might take decades, right?
Right.
You have to take care of this very slowly aging population as they gradually get into maturity. Apparently, there's a lot of logistical reasons why.
They figured that out about whales, too.
Did anybody try whale farms?
Well, no, but it was like, you know, whales.
Just on the back of a napkin, you could be like, this isn't going to pencil out.
It's an inexhaustible resource, whales.
There's also maybe the anthropomorphizing of turtles. You mentioned, you know, like the tortoise and the hare, the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles,
sure, that,
Franklin the
that
turtle.
Did it in.
There's all these, you know, turtles now exist in popular culture in a way that might make us a little, the same way my wife doesn't want to eat rabbit.
Yeah. What if you call it Hasenpfeffer? Does she want to eat it then?
She likes German food, but I think rabbit's kind of a deal breaker for her. Our neighborhood is full of cute little rabbits, and
they are not
she,
cute.
She hasn't eaten one of them. I mean, they're a menace if you're trying to garden, for sure.
When was the first, can you think of the first anthropomorphized turtle in like children's literature?
I mean, Aesop, right? But cute turtles are showing up in Disney cartoons from the beginning. Like when Snow White has her, all her little friends, there's the ones you would expect, a deer and a bunny and a skunk or whatnot. But there's, I think there's turtles too.
Yeah, okay.
So they, somehow they got kind of asterisked into the, or grandfathered into the cute animal area in a way that no other reptile did, you know, like Snow White's not going to be playing with a garter snake or a gator.
Well, because other than the snapping thing, like a box turtle is a sweet little fella.
I had a pet turtle. Did I ever tell you this?
Is that right? You and surely you still do because they lived to be 80 years old and you cared for it and raised it to adulthood.
Perhaps younger Ken should have been taking better care of. I don't know what the little. In the U.S., there's a law against turtles as pets. And it's interestingly, it's not species based, it's size based. If the shell is less than 4 inches, you can't have a pet turtle.
Really? Well, why would they say you can't have a baby turtle, but you can have a.
I think it's not an animal rights issue. It's a public health issue. Turtles carry salmonella.
Oh.
And the idea is the smaller the turtle, the more likely that a kid is going to be playing a little, you know, a toddler is going to be putting it in its mouth or something.
Yeah.
But I was living in Europe in college where there are no such laws. And
here.
It's a real libertarian's paradise in the European Union. I'll tell you that. But for whatever reason, you could buy and sell little turtles at pet stores in a way that, and I had memories of all these kids' books about getting a little turtle and painting a flower. And I was like, this is amazing. You can still do this here.
Yeah.
And the other great thing about Europe is, and I hope this is not animal cruelty, is you can, your turtle can live in your bidet.
Oh.
You've got a bidet that if you're American, you're probably not using that much.
Sure, it's a little turtle.
It's a little terrarium. Yeah, it's got, you can have a water part and a dry land part. And I don't know. My turtle seemed very happy there. Brought him back to the States in a soap dish.
On the airplane?
Yeah, probably a bad idea. Can sniffer dogs smell?
Well, they didn't
turtles?
Have them then.
Yeah.
Because it was just the Wild West of the 1980s.
Pre-9/11 world.
Yeah.
So yeah, they're cute, and I wonder if that's part of it. But I had
a friend in Alaska that had a turtle.
Like a big one in a terrarium?
No, a little one in a shoebox. But Alaska has fewer laws than other places.
And fewer turtles.
But my friend Joni has a turtle named Sheldon that has been with her her whole life. Sheldon is like, she puts him out on the grass every day. Although she lives in New York now, so who knows where they find
that. Is he bigger than an ashtray? How big is Sheldon?
Yeah, Sheldon's now, well, he's as big as a laptop.
He's
probably
as big as a stew mixing bowl?
And that may be as big as Sheldon gets because he's 40 years old.
Right.
Sheldon, or at least, you know, maybe 35 years old.
I mean, that turns out to be one of the problems with turtle conservation, as we'll see. They live so long, but their reproductive strategy means have a lot of delicious eggs.
Turtle eggs are delicious?
Yeah, that's what's really, well, let's get to the conservation part of this. So I guess, you know, one thing that happened, we should say that all Americans used to eat more interesting meats. Right? Before World War II, if you're getting meat from your own farm or from your neighbor's farm or from your town butcher that knows which farm, you know, that's when people would just, for dinner, Americans would just eat rabbit or oxtail or turtle or grouse or, you know, think nothing of it.
But Americans used to eat more interesting apples and more interesting corn, and there was just a lot. There was more interesting stuff that hadn't been eradicated by,
I guess, by monocultures and
by just
factory farming. Well, that's what happened after World War II. Factory farming means, and some of this might be consumer driven. Once you've had a hamburger, do you want to go back to squirrel for dinner? Maybe not.
Interesting.
But really, American
crow.
The American meat industry became beef, pork, chicken, and it just became harder and harder to get unusual meats, and maybe the consumer was less interested in them.
You know, that's Noel Gallagher. That's a sign of
upward mobility becomes I'm eating beef, pork, and chicken.
You love Noel Gallagher and all his works.
Who's the good one? Who's funnier, Noel or Liam?
Noel. Oh, wait a minute. Noel is the good one and Liam's the funny one?
I don't know.
Is that what it is? Noel's the songwriter and Liam's the
You tell the angry story and I'll tell you if I'm in favor.
I don't even remember which one. But he says the consumer doesn't know what they want. They didn't want Jimi Hendrix, but we gave them Jimi Hendrix and then they liked it. The consumer never wanted the Sex Pistols, but they got the Sex Pistols and then they enjoyed it. So he said, don't ever think about what the consumer wants. You just have to give them what you want. I'm getting this from an Instagram video that came across my feed that was, you know, 40 seconds long.
But I think that's totally true, and not just of music and not just of art, probably.
Right.
Like anybody can give somebody what they already want. Anybody can make a book that looks like last year's hit. The cover looks like last year's bestseller. Anybody can record an album that sounds like, you know, whoever was popular last year.
I mean, there are 600,000 crows in my neighborhood. And I bet you there are 6 million crows in your neighborhood.
Got a lot of crows.
And if somebody had long ago said, the best food is crow, and you have to harvest 500 crow to make one pie.
I mean, just think about how long we were eating the wrong foods. Delicious pad thai was right there.
Yeah.
And
it wasn't, though. We were eating Siam.
Right. But Siam had been discovered.
Oh, I suppose, yeah.
You know, for centuries, we had the technology to get us pad thai or teriyaki or any of these things, and we were just eating gross white people food.
Yeah. Snails.
I like oxtails. I like a lot of these foods, but they just became harder to get.
How do you feel about escargots? Did we get them the last time they had them at our favorite little French restaurant?
Do they ever have escargots?
Yeah, they do. I get them every time they have them, but it's always just they have like 10 servings of it.
Mindy's lived in France and won't eat them, so I never order them because I would be eating them all, but they just taste like garlic butter, which is the best food.
That's right. You get a little piece of French bread and you put garlic butter on it, and it's got this little black slimy blob in the middle, and it's like down the hatch.
If it tastes like garlic butter, I'll eat anything. I'll eat garbage.
Are they any grosser than a oyster?
Not to me.
Oyster's gross.
But I think Mindy is very much like, it's just a slug. We can't eat that. And I'm like, no, it's a clam. We can't eat this. But those are the two. That's the glasses. I'm kind of a snail is half full.
Yeah, sure.
Kind of a guy.
That's a clam. No, it's a slug.
As you might imagine, all these kind of sociological explanations for the decline of turtle soup are kind of burying the lead. The main problem with turtles is, as you could probably guess, we were eating too many of them. It was not sustainable because Mother Nature is not producing turtles fast enough for all the ladies who lunch who wanted to have turtle soup.
That's why it's clear that God wants us to eat chickens, pigs, and beefs.
Because they're everywhere.
The end.
I mean, chickens especially. Chickens are
oh my God.
Running around. You can't turn around in Hawaii or Venezuela without stepping on a chicken.
Yeah, they're like the crows. They're like ground crows.
Delicious ground crows. But turtles, not so much. As I was saying, they live a long time, but there's kind of an unusual reproductive strategy where what keeps the population stable is they just have a lot of eggs for decades because they know that the eggs are delicious. Well, they don't know this, but the invisible hand of nature knows that weasels and snakes and raccoons are going to eat a lot of the eggs. And they need that long lifespan or else they're not sustainable.
And then humans who are watching raccoons and weasels, because that's always, you know, a human sport, weasel watching, they see the weasels eat the turtle eggs and they're like, well, weasels are never wrong.
Famously, what do we always say about weasels? That's the old saying, weasels are never wrong. And so we did eat turtle eggs, but like that strategy relies on a bunch of adult turtles not getting taken out of circulation while their eggs are still getting et.
Right.
And so the second that people are like, this creek's got 1,000 turtles in them, let's fish out like
the fat ones.
Let's fish out hundreds of turtles a day. And there were like, you know, into the 20th century, there were like you could go to some pond and there'd be 1,000 alligator snapping turtles and people would just keep pulling out hundreds of alligator snapping turtles until they were almost gone.
The fact that turtles now are like, oh, look, a turtle. is just a result of turtle eating
too many turtles and habitat loss. I mean, obviously wetlands are among the most, you know, rare and fragile biomes.
But when you canoe through the Arboretum, you'll see a sunken log and there's like 9 turtles on it. And you feel like, we always get our cameras out and like, turtles!
And yeah, there was a time when they were probably more like ants or crows, you know? That I think I've read stories of like ponds where people could just fish out 1,000 turtles a day.
Whoa.
And it did a number on populations. When the Endangered Species Act was passed in 1972, turtles were immediately, so many species of turtles immediately went on it. And that made it a felony to kill a turtle, different states have created their own protections on their own threatened or endangered turtle populations. I guess there are a few states where there's a few snapping turtle species that are less threatened. A small number of recreational hunting permits are given out every season for people who do want to have that swamp fun. But
did you say swamp fun?
Is there a better kind of fun? There's two kinds of fun. Fun and then the highest level, swamp fun.
Have you noticed, well, surely you have, just recently Google now, the first returns are all AI returns?
It's terrible. It's
so infuriating. I wish I could turn it off. Maybe you can.
Google doesn't want you to, but there are third parties that will let you get around Google's.
But I just asked Google what the Washington State turtle laws are. And it says, the AI says, Washington State has several laws regarding turtles, including it's illegal to sell, offer to sale, or hold for sale live turtles with a carapace length greater than 4 inches.
Oh, there you go.
And taking turtles from the wild, it is illegal to take them from the wild or import wild turtles. And this includes all species of turtles. And you cannot release turtles into the wild. Washington is very, very nanny state about all that stuff.
Some of those are federal laws, so I don't know how much I believe the Google AI. But yes, in general, there are state level protections against their turtle, tortoise, and terrapin populations, especially the ones that were so delicious for centuries that they kind of got hunted into oblivion. And because turtles are so slow to live and reproduce, even though turtle soup has not been in vogue for 70 years, the populations still have not recovered. Partly due to habitat loss, but partly just due to the fact that we put a huge dent in it for a century of turtle eating.
You know, we see these red-eared turtles in Washington ponds. They are an invasive species.
Oh, those shouldn't be here?
No, it's the eastern pond turtle.
Those are the ones I always see, I think.
Yeah, me too.
What's interesting, though, is that this kind of Adam Smith invisible hand of, well, turtles are getting too rare and expensive, let's stop eating them and eat something else, that did not save every species that happened to, you know, passenger pigeons, famously, we just
gone.
Kept sucking on the bones till they were all gone. So I was interested in the question of why turtles actually, why the demand died and the fashion died in time to at least stop the extinction. And that actually goes back to 1919. Do you know what happened in 1919 that kind of saved a bunch of turtle species?
The pandemic.
Yes. It killed all these people were about to eat a turtle, and then they were like,
they died of the flu.
I have a fever. I'm going to put this turtle down, and maybe I'll kill it later when I get better.
It was the end of World War I.
All our doughboys came home from Europe, and they were like, I've had eclairs now. I'm not eating that crap.
How are you going to keep them down on the turtle farm? Well, let's see. What else happened in 1919 before the flu, other than the flu and the pandemic?
I had never thought about this. There was a restaurant catastrophe at the time that restaurants called a gastronomic holocaust.
Oh, dear.
Like the restaurant industry was just shaken in 1919 by, maybe somebody listening has guessed by now,
a turtle salmonella outbreak.
Prohibition.
Oh, wow.
Imagine if you're a chef at some fancy place in 1919 and suddenly you can't cook with wine, you can't cook with brandy, you can't cook with any of these things. And I guess I had never thought about the culinary side of Prohibition, but it was in all the papers. Chefs were just
distraught. Can't cook with the...
Isn't that crazy?
That is crazy.
Never thought about this.
You couldn't have any wine to put in your sauce.
Think about all the foods you just could not make anymore at a, you know, and there were less foods and fewer foods in America at the time, but there were still plenty of French and Italian restaurants that were cooking with Marsala or whatever.
I feel now that I finally have a reason to be against Prohibition. So how are you going to cook without wine?
You were for all the gangsters.
Oh, yeah. Big time.
You loved the moonshiners. You're always talking about it.
I really liked the speakeasies and, you know, Fat Sam's giant clams.
So the thing about turtle soup is it basically is sherry soup. It's one of the more alcoholic dishes on a luncheon menu at the time or a banquet menu. And I think a lot of them had the little tableside splash of sherry. And once that was gone, nobody wanted that anymore. Yeah, like nobody wanted, exactly. Nobody wanted to just eat a turtle soup that did not taste like sherry, it turned out. And by that time, it was already food for the rich. You know, the diamondback terrapin that the Algonquins and the Delawares or whoever had eaten for centuries, now it was costing like $100 a turtle. And I don't know if that's $19 dollars or modern, but really that's something you eat to show off, like some d*** oil guy putting gold leaf on his burger.
Right.
So...
Hey.
Oh, sorry, is that hitting a little too close to home?
Be careful now.
Were you eating lobster burgers in a mixing bowl right before you came here today?
Yeah, it was shrimp, but yeah.
You love shrimp. So that was it. That was kind of it for turtle soup.
Huh.
Without alcohol, what is even the point? And it's probably saved a bunch of species, honestly. The good thing about Prohibition, the turtles were cheering it on.
And people were just eating a lot of weird foods just to have backdoor alcohol or the taste of sherry.
I don't know. I like the turtle soup I had, but yeah, maybe it was just a way to enjoy some fortified wine with dinner.
Your prohibition on alcohol does not extend to food cooked with alcohol, even though you know that the alcohol doesn't actually burn off like we always used to.
Everybody
say.
Says that, yeah. And then you look at the curve of it, and you know, like the half life is like, yeah, in an hour, half of it burns off. In 2 hours, you're down to 3 hours. As long as you cook your thing for 8 hours, you got out 92% of the alcohol or whatever. Yeah, no, I'm not really too fussy about that because who knows? You know, yeah. Like I don't know what's
well,
in
and
there.
What are you? You're having a tablespoon of alcohol.
Exactly. So turtles are not in trouble from soup anymore, but they are from other diners. Like I think China is ramping up, and they want our snapping turtles.
Sure, that seems like it confirms my bias.
Yeah, right. Like, I mean, and this is not like, you know, them going to the wet market and biting the head off a bat or whatever. Like, this is just
normal.
It has medicinal qualities.
Yeah,
and,
sure.
So the turtles are still in trouble. We have our friend George is very into turtle conservation. Did you know that?
Like, no, I did.
He's been all around the world writing big checks to weird species of turtles we'd never heard of. And
I mean, he's a nut. So that. Again, confirm my bias about George. Oh, turtles, you say?
Are you saying that we should be against saving turtles because he's such an oddball?
No.
He's odd, but he's right about the turtles.
Yes. I mean, these are weird times, and people are pretty histrionic about how everything's dying.
Turtles are cute little animals.
Turtles is where you're going to start? Why not save the humans? Remember that bumper sticker?
Good one. That was like the Blue Lives Matter of conservation.
It was. And that concludes Turtle Soup, entry 1351.SS0212, certificate number 32793 in the omnibus. Futurelings, social media died. So long ago, Threads just sent me, for the first time today, Threads sent me an email like, here are some things you missed on Threads. I don't remember when that setting arrived. I've never gotten one from them before. And it had a little email that had like three threads that I missed. And every one of them sucked. They were all like,
Mark Zuckerberg does not know what you want.
No, it was just people like really complaining about some minor league garbage. Like, I can't believe that the people that make M&Ms don't realize rabbit. Blah, blah. And I was like, lame, Threads, lame. So anyway, stay off of social media. What you should do instead of social media is you should go to patreon.com/omnibusproject.
It's kind of a social media site.
Patreon.com/omnibusproject.
It's a community.
All you have to do is give a token amount every month to the tune of $5, and you can hang out with other futurelings there. And the more people, I wish Patreon had a better everything, but you know, you can leave comments there, and
there's a little forum.
Yeah, communicate.
People chatting it up.
Chat it up. That's right. And stay off of these ones that show you these terrible, you know, Noel Gallagher videos. Why do you even want that? You don't.
Are you a scroller now? Or are you just waiting to see what the algorithm shows
just
you next?
So bad.
Because somehow I've managed to avoid becoming a what will the algorithm show me next guy.
And I don't want any of it. And I throw my phone down in frustration because what happens is I'm like, oh yeah, I'm watching this guy trim like diseased cow hooves. And then the algorithm's like, you like diseased cow hooves. And I'm like, I don't. I don't want that.
I never did.
I don't want to watch Dr. Pimple Popper. You just showed it to me, and now here I am.
I have to say New York Times spelling bee is keeping me away from the...
Yeah, I like that too. But you're always trying to get... I just try to get to... What is the one that I try to get to? The one where they give you a little celebration.
Genius?
Genius. I try to get to Genius,
well,
and then I'm like...
that's the highest one. Congratulations.
Well, yeah, but you're always trying to get every word.
There is a super secret level.
And the last three words are always like, splorgadork. And you don't even know the word. You're just throwing letters at it.
I'm starting to know all their weird words that should not be in there.
Yeah.
Nankeen. I think it's a fabric.
Oh, not Nankeen, but Nankeen.
Yeah, never heard of that. But,
no, see, that's the thing.
But the sixth time it pissed me off on spelling bee, I remembered it.
See, so I don't bother. As soon as I get to Genius, I'm like, that's right, confirmed. And I get out. Anyway, you can find things online at Kent Jennings, at John Roderick, at Omnibus Project. We don't endorse any of it, really, but it's there. And I do post on Instagram sometimes. I think Ken just lurks there.
I should. I keep meaning, like, as a professional thing, I should be somewhere, and why not Instagram? But I keep not doing it.
Yeah. But you can email us at theomnibusproject@gmail.com. You can hang out with futurelings on the only good sites on social media, which are Omnibus fan sites on Facebook and
an island of sanity and good vibes. Places.
And you can, in addition to going to patreon.com/omnibusproject and for a small donation, getting so many benefits, it's basically a wave of benefits. You can actually
an avalanche of benefits.
You can mail us actual physical media and other things, all the stuff in your grandparents' drawers that. Not your grandparents' underpants.
Stay out of your grandparents' drawers.
But your grandparents' like junk drawers. You can send those to us at P.O. Box 55744, Shoreline, Washington 98155. What you're opening mail over there? What do you got?
I got some postcards. Lily was apparently in Santa Claus, Indiana, which has a Christmas-themed water park year-round. Mm. I guess.
Mm-hmm.
Given its name, Holiday World now. And Splashin' Safari.
Wait, did they take Christmas Town away because of the secularization of America, and now it's called Holiday Town?
We have to go to Holiday World because of woke. No, these are their mascots. Apparently, it's an alligator called Safari Sam who has one of those kind of Outback hats.
Sure.
What are those called?
A bush hat.
A bush hat. Holodog, a dog who symbolizes the holidays because he has a baseball cap and a rainbow?
Uh-huh.
I don't
uh-huh.
understand any of this.
Okay.
Kitty Claus, who does not look like Santa Claus but is a kitty with claws.
These are all furry costumes.
They're all furries.
They're furry sex
and,
costumes.
And George the Eagle because America.
That's the, you know, all those places in like in Wisconsin and Minnesota and where is this? Indiana?
Indiana.
There's all these places in the mid United States, the Midwest they call it. Full of weird, weird amusement parks.
Ohio has like more amusement parks on a city block than California does in all of the state.
Yeah. And they all have strange themes like, oh, it's the Peanuts roller coaster. You're like, what is that?
It would be even weirder than Peanuts. Like you go to one of these and it's so off brand. It's like, you can meet Nancy and Sluggo or... Look over there. It's all your favorites from Deputy Dog.
Hey, kids, it's Pogo.
Well, thank you, Lily, for suggesting we do a show about holiday. Oh, maybe it's all holidays because Lily says their newest roller coaster is Thanksgiving themed and called Good Gravy.
Oh, my God.
Am I wrong that maybe there should not be a gravy themed roller coaster?
I feel like Lily is really onto something here.
Our Chilean correspondent Ramon apparently has left his native land. It must be in Paraguay because that is where this postcard comes from, a beautiful Paraguayan landscape.
You're holding it sideways.
Well, I need to read this part.
Oh, I see.
This is not for you. This is not all about you. Here.
This is not for you.
I will tilt my head so you can see the horizon.
Wait a minute. Paraguay is representing itself as having an ocean because that looks like the sun setting on an ocean. But that is clearly either a lake or river.
Look at landlocked Paraguay with its beautiful, beautiful ocean views.
The photographer like got way down on the ground and put his camera right at the...
There must be some... Wait, is Paraguay is not on Lake Titicaca. That's Bolivia. What big lake is there in Ciudad del Este? Somebody,
I mean, the problem is most of central Paraguay hasn't even been explored yet. I feel like if you're in Chile, yeah, I guess you go to Paraguay, but I don't think you want to.
That's what Chilean bandits say. Butch, next time I say, let's go to Paraguay, let's really go to Paraguay. And then Bruce says he's,
You know what it is? It's the Parana River, which has been dammed and is a big, huge, lakey thing. I betcha.
This is where Paraguayans go to the beach.
Yeah, I think so.
This is like their boardwalk. Bruce says he's way too Thursday for Patreon. We have, unfortunately,
what does that mean? It's way too Thursday.
Well, the Patreon people now get shows on Tuesday.
So he's a Thursday bro.
We've accidentally created...
Two classes.
Sorry, Marxists.
What Ken means is that if you subscribe to the Patreon, you get the show 2 days early and ad-free.
Right. And we leave in all the racial slurs.
But the Thursday people are like people of the streets, right. Just like regular.
Men of the soil.
Yeah, like working class regulars.
We pirate movies.
Or rich kids who discovered socialism in college and are like, you know, fronting. Like,
I'm not paying $5 for a podcast.
Yeah, my mom and dad cut off my...
I don't think anybody that young or rich is listening to Omnibus.
I think you're wrong.
but instead of giving us $5 American, he made a one Omnibuck. This is a hand-drawn postcard.
Oh, that's rad.
With a nice little... You look... we both look like different kinds of castaways on... Look at this. We both look like we've both been on an island for a very long time.
My beard is out of control, and also...
But also, I have a beard somehow.
Yeah, my nose is kind of out of control, and you for sure look like Jeopardy has taken its toll.
It's been some kind of lost weekend there.
But I like this Omnibuck. This is going to go up on the wall of fame.
There's no note, but either Penguin Random House or author... I'm going to say maybe spy author.
Graham Moore
sent us a copy, a pre-pub copy of his new novel, The Wealth of Shadows.
What is that piece of paper that's tucked in it?
An invoice.
It doesn't have a note?
No, but it is to you and me. So this must be omnibus related and not just...
The Wealth of Shadows. It seems very spy.
No less than James Patterson endorses Graham's work as, if John le Carré and Ken Follett collaborated on a novel, that would be very unusual because they're dead.
Yeah.
Actually, wait, is Ken Follett alive? Who knows? Oh, I know. This is the screenwriter of The Imitation Game. Hasn't this guy written us before?
Oh.
I have a vague memory that we have spoken to Graham before.
Ken Follett is still alive.
Good to know. Is he old?
He's old.
He's got to be old.
He's 75 years old.
That's younger than I thought.
Yeah, he's not that old.
Well, Eye of the Needle came out in like 1977 or something. Like,
yeah. Well, those
good for him.
He would have been
a young man.
Younger.
You know. Is that how that works? He would have been younger?
He would have been, yeah, right in his 20s or late 20s.
Right, but like good for him having a spy bestseller in his mid-20s. And then Crystal must have known it was my birthday. She sent me a cool lenticular paisley.
Oh.
Bookmark.
Oh, look at that.
It's tied into Jeopardy. So she loves all my ties, and therefore it's a paisley.
It's multiple dimensions in that one piece of paper.
Can you see the dolphins?
If I do this. Tripendicular.
And also there's something else where somehow she's printed out my face on a piece of metal.
Let me see it. Oh, wow. And I think that's a handsome picture of you, don't you?
I guess it looks like a selfie though, because one shoulder is up.
Let me see that again.
Doesn't it look like I selfied it? Look how one shoulder is higher than the other.
You know what it looks like? If you ran for Congress and got elected, that would be the picture hanging in your office.
And I think the reason why she's sending this to me is because she wants me to sign it. Yes, because there is a self-addressed stamp envelope. And what? I will absolutely be doing that. Thank you for the bookmark.
Because she's clearly not a German who wants you to sign 50 things and send them back.
Yeah, I do get a lot of those.
Yeah.
I never know what to do. Lately, I've been signing one.
Oh, that's smart.
But I feel like I'm just like...
Throw the rest in the
not trash. Doing the nice thing or the principled thing. I'm just kind of picking a thing in the middle.
Yeah. Oh, you're a fan? Here's one.
You get to be a little bit of a fan.
Not 17 that you're going to sell on eBay.
Listeners, from our vantage point in your distant past, we have no idea how long our civilization survived. Longer than the turtles, we hope.
Hmm. We hope No, we want the turtles to survive.
Sorry, I misspoke. Hopefully less than the turtles.
Yes.
We hope and pray. The turtles are mutating. They're in the sewers. They're eating pizza.
Yes.
They've got nunchucks.
Bigger and bigger all the time.
We hope and pray that the catastrophe we fear may never come. But if the worst comes soon, this recording, like all our recordings, may be our final word. But if Providence allows, we hope to be back with you soon for another entry in the Omnibus.